This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho.
Men in Blazers World Headquarters.
It's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Buzzing, Dave.
You are?
I'm still buzzing, yeah.
Really? Everton's win at the weekend?
No. That wore off pretty quickly.
Your performance on Togger?
No. Having Mike Myers on the show.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Whole and all relieved. I just loved the outfit. Was fantastic.
The commitment to the part.
Yeah, the British paratrooper outfit. He hadn't just gone to a store and bought. He'd put it together in various ways. I think he'd only rented one item. Everything else he'd purchased or had sent to him or lent to him by various people. But he really looked the part of a British airborne, British paratrooper, circa 1975.
And he walked into our studio,
yeah,
our soundstage.
Yeah.
And he said what to you?
Hold until relieved.
He said that.
Yep.
And you repeated it back to him,
yep,
several times.
Yep.
While the ice was broken.
Hold and all relieved. No, he said that he liked our show a lot because it looked a lot like Wayne's World. And he can really see the influence. By the way, the other thing he spoke to me about was our graphics. He loves the clockwork, handmade nature of our graphics, which appears as we're just holding things up with spoons, which I said, well, we are just holding things up with spoons.
Did he think it was high tech?
Yeah.
He thought that was like we'd had suboptimal signs created,
yeah,
in a high-tech
three-dimensional
fashion.
Graphics created that looks like we're just holding up signs with spoons.
He was shocked to find out it was just paper.
Yep, paper
and a wooden,
spoons.
Wooden stirring,
exactly,
spoon. I can't say, to find out that our suboptimal crap, David, reminds,
yeah,
him of Wayne's World.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know where you were when you first saw Wayne's World.
Party on. Where was I when
that,
I first saw Wayne's
World? By the way, anyone who just heard that, do that noise again.
Party on.
That's Davo doing Wayne's World in Rebecca Lowe's American
pretty
accent
much
voice.
Exactly. So, I don't know where I was, but no, it's superb. Wayne's World.
I saw it in the cinema in Liverpool.
Him and Dana.
When it came out in 1992.
I'm talking about the movie. I'm talking about the original sketch.
No. I mean, I didn't know Saturday Night Live in England when I was growing up, but this movie just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just the vibe, the scenes, the street hockey, game on, car. Mm-hmm. The guitar store, no stairway, denied. The Stan Makita's donut. Watching it from Liverpool, it made Aurora, Illinois just look like the greatest place on earth, David.
Yeah.
Which it may or may not be. I've never been there.
See, it dates me. I was already in the US.
When you were here?
When Wayne's World went on Saturday Night Live, I was already here.
Wow.
Yeah.
My God.
So I used to watch it.
We're all on the conveyor belt of life, my friend.
I saw Mike Myers do comedy with his old partner, Neil Malarkey, in England, circa 1984... late 1984 at Jongleurs Comedy Club in Battersea, South Chelsea Bridges, London, Rog.
When young Davo was talent spotting, you looked at them and you're like, no, it'll never happen.
Yeah, no, exactly. I say, that Neil Malarkey's going to be successful.
He's got a future. He's funny.
Yeah.
But when I saw Wayne's World, it made me think about England.
Mm-hmm.
Words that were best summed up for me this week, actually, by comic genius Steve Coogan,
mm-hmm,
in his Alan Partridge Guys.
Oh, love Alan Partridge.
When he said, he was asked to explain, as Alan Partridge, what Britain was like post-Brexit,
mm-hmm,
what united the country, and he mused for a second. He said, quote, certain things, and then he read them out. I think it's beautiful.
It's warm beer and cold hands. It's the clacking of bowling balls. That's like crown green bowling, not tenpin bowling. If you don't know what crown green bowling is, just look it up.
Just
it's so depressing.
Just Google crown green bowling Jurgen Klopp video and you will find it. It's fantastic.
The peal of church bells. It's tutting when you see an ice cream van selling hamburgers. It's a healthy suspicion of human rights. My father would be like, oh, yes, human rights. Mm, very overrated.
On Vogue, but not
it's
thought
punch,
out.
It's a Punch and Judy show. That scene in Downton Abbey with the Punch and Judy show. It's a Punch and Judy show having a giggle at a domestic incident. It's a dozen sausage rolls in a Tupperware box and a pair of trunks wrapped in a towel. It's an iPhone. It's an iPhone charger. That's global, unfortunately. Yeah, that is post-Brexit Britain.
God, that is but pretty well everything I wanted to get away from.
Mm.
And that's when I left that cinema watching Wayne's World, I knew I was going to leave, David. That movie changed my life. Like one of a couple, I don't know if you've ever seen a movie and just been like, that movie just changed how I think about everything.
Body Heat.
Yes.
And then 9 and a half weeks.
Yeah.
those two movies pretty much changed everything.
Other than that, that you had a strange tingling down
yeah,
south.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Body Heat and Nine and
a
Half.
Feeling
a
stirring.
Those two films.
Yeah, that was it for you. And mine were more like highbrow.
Yeah, what a shock.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Made me move to Chicago. And I put Wayne's World in there.
Back to the Future made me think a lot.
Yeah, I bet it did. Which scene?
Just hard. Everything about it.
The one I remember was when he was lying on his bed in Back to the Future and he had his hand like twisted into his pocket. And I remember watching it thinking, no one can sleep like that. No one can sleep like that. He's showing off a gene, a manufacturer that they had a product endorsement from. The other one, yeah, Ferris Bueller,
yeah,
Wayne's World, and probably Claude Lanzmann's Shower. Those are probably, maybe Once Were Warriors, which made me both attracted to and terrified of New Zealand at the same time. But my Myers.
Local hero.
Total hero to me. Mm. Up there with Stephen Naismith and Philip Larkin. So giddy to have spent time with him, even though, Dave, as you now know, he's a huge Liverpool fan.
He is. Like your brother.
Never hold that against him. Not sure if we can top having Mike Myers in here, Davey.
Yeah.
Though luckily, viewers, you have several months to find out if we can do it, because we're not on again till November 21st. 5:30 NBC unleashing us only for the biggest game post games, Davo.
Yeah,
we're coming on after West Brom.
After West Brom. Oh, I love it. We got to do something special for that.
No, I'd be more excited
for our collective love of West Brom.
If it was East, South, or North Brom, I'd be able to get it up for it. But bloody West Brom again, Davo.
Oh, they play beautiful football.
Oh, thank God we got Burnley then.
Hopefully it'll be Martin Tyler commentating again, the Alan Partridge of British football commentators.
God, it's going to be, I predict, Dave, and I don't like to predict, I don't like to go out on a limp because I know it's hard. People re-listen to pods and you say silly things like we're about to today about Chelsea winning the title still in my mind. But I believe,
I'll say it out.
I'm going to go all out on this. Yeah. West Brom Burnley, ratings buster.
Yes. Yeah. If by what you mean as a buster is that it's going to bust NBC's ratings for football.
Why can't we go on after Watford Sunderland, NBC, a really good game?
Yeah, that'd be bigger. That would be bigger. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, Rog. Okay, we have a packed show. We're going to break down the narrative-rich, goal-deprived, 0-0. Did he really just pass a note? Draw between Manchester United and Burnley. We're going to duck and cover. Well, we might have to duck and cover based on this presidential election, Rog. We're going to duck and cover while recapping.
There was a presidential election going on. My mind's just on the football.
Who knew? We duck and cover while recapping an offensive explosion from Manchester City, Arsenal and Liverpool at the top of the table. And we light a candle, we bow our heads, and we say a prayer for double B after Swansea's loss at Stoke. Plus, we dive into the MLS playoffs, where the curse of Rog, it's back, and it's real, Rog. Okay, to the football, crack open a Guinness, Rog. Cheers, Rog.
Oh, Davo, cheers to a weekend of weekends. Thank God for football. It allows me to think about something other than the presidential election. Although I am a tiny bit worried that we're going to find out within the next couple of weeks that Jose Mourinho has a secret server directly connected to a Russian bank. Although that probably wouldn't be much of a surprise, would it? But I will raise my glass. I'll say what a weekend. One in which any one of five clubs could have topped the table at the end of Sunday. And by the end of it, three teams now stand abreast on 23 points each after lashing four goals this weekend. We got ourselves a title race for the ages, David. It's the best one since last season.
Yeah, without a doubt. Okay, we are 10/38 of the way through the Premier League season. And if he hadn't already done so, Jose Mourinho appears to have completed his metamorphosis from Lenny Bruce to Carrot Top. Manchester United 0, Burnley 0. A football festival at which the main stage featured Claret's keeper Tom Heaton rappelling shot after Zlatan's shot. But much of the headlines this morning revolve around the side stage performance of Jose Mourinho, who was banished to the stands and then the director's box after using abusive language towards Mark Clattenburg at halftime. That's not allowed.
I think the abusive language was probably that he looked Clattenburg in the eye, which you're not meant to do.
No, you're not.
And he failed to call him Sir.
Yeah, exactly. Sir Mark Clattenburg. Oh my God. If ever there's a guy who's wanted a knighthood, it's Clattenburg.
Has he not got one yet?
Yeah.
It's a disgrace.
Yeah, exactly.
Get on it, Queen. Oh, what A performance, David.
Mm-hmm.
United, we watched them blast 37 shots,
yep.
11 of them on goal. They thrashed 19 corners to no avail.
Mm.
GFOP at a beatdown best summed up the feelings currently intoxicating United fans when he asked, at what point can we call Manchester United season torture porn?
There is a certain masochistic quality around it. Yeah.
And I'm not one to delve in other people's misery.
No, but you don't enjoy it at all.
Let's go back before the game.
Yeah.
We're in the run-up. Jose Mourinho, Davo, and I'm speaking to you as one of the world's leading Mourinhoologists.
Yeah, Mourinhoologists.
We're spending just a huge amount of his time mansplaining.
Yeah.
Or more accurately, manager-splaining.
Yeah.
Just bemoaning the size of the cultural change he's got to deliver at Old Trafford. He said, in 3 months, it's not so easy to change the most difficult thing, which are personalities. Mm-hmm. A guy who's had no problem at previous clubs.
Chelsea 2004, 2005.
And he also started to complain about the transient nature of his Manchester home life.
Oh, the Lowry Hotel.
Life
the Lowry.
Is a disaster amidst the fans, the selfies. He's got a stalker, Davo.
Oh.
I just imagine him with his two small ironing board out, wearing the shower cap, trying to sew a button back onto his shirt with the sewing kit that always has oddly coloured cotton choices.
Filling out that laundry list, trying to think, is this a T-shirt or is it a polo shirt? Which category do I put it in?
Trying to get away for a cheaper price by ticking women's blouse.
Yeah.
Oh, we've all been there. That's it. It's just such an odd Mourinho,
David.
Do I
want this dry cleaned or just pressed? What do I do? Very tough.
I don't know. What you do, you just hang it up while you're showering and it normally solves all problems.
The steaming.
Steam.
Good
yes.
tip. Good tip. Life hack.
I just say, I've never seen this Mourinho, David. One in which he's trying to signal himself as a vulnerable persona as opposed to the omniscient, omnipotent, all the oms, David.
I think we've seen every Mourinho. I think that's what's interesting about this. See, I think this is, it's a very weird thing reliving this from an observer point of view. What I witnessed inside as a Chelsea fan, which just hurt so much. Now watching it, it's almost surreal watching him go through the several stages of disappointment and grief and horror that he's going through right now. And I feel like we
Freud
have seen
in
this
his book
before.
Moses said that it's when child becomes a man when you realise daddy has clay feet.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going through?
A little bit. A little bit. And yet there's so much that's so familiar. Midweek, you said, like, let's see where we were coming in. Midweek, he manages to bounce back, beats his arch-rival Pep Guardiola, Manchester City, in whatever the English Football League Cup is called now. Nobody knows.
I think it's Crown Green Bowls.
Yeah, nobody knows. Nobody knows. And it feels like, as often happens with Jose Mourinho, something bad happens, something good happens, and then immediately something bad happens again, then something good happens, then immediately something bad happens again. And it's just this roller coaster of emotion. He just cannot get any break whatsoever, nor can his team, nor can anyone involved
but
in Manchester United.
That's not the Mourinho narrative. He used to be God. You know, anointing, picking the Ten Commandments, all that crap. Now he's Job, Davo, and I'm not okay with this new kind of role that he's taken on for himself.
But last season he wasn't God. Last season he got fired at Chelsea when he had, I think, less than 15 points. I think he had maybe 11 points at the end of 10 games last season. So he'd had an even worse start last season. This, by the way, is an improvement on last season for Jose Mourinho. So we've seen it before. It's just really weird watching it again.
It is really weird. It's really weird watching him make the different decisions he is as he's trying to shake United out of the trough, looking for their first win in six in the league. Here he made the craziest decision of all, looking in his file marked S for scapegoat, pulling out a manila envelope marked Juan Mata and saying, I will make you captain. On Trundle, the only living boy in New York. And he looked like a spark plug of a player, Davo, instantly creating chances.
He's been great for him all season.
Oh, absolutely delirious. But Tom Heaton, in goal, Davo, from the off, still invincible.
It was amazing watching that keeping performance. I mean, some of those saves weren't just saves. They were flailing, whirling dervishes of saves. Four limbs akimbo, flying at the ball. It was just one of the most remarkable goalkeeping performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, this was, by the way, a Burnley side, we should say, winless on the season on the road. They set up to be rewarded with the accolades of organised, determined, hard to break down, if only they could hold up for a draw or nick a goal through Andre Gray. And at the back, it's just Tom Heaton over and over again. And then he was a Manchester United Academy rejectee, having been on the books at Old Trafford from ages 11 to 24. Only made, I guess, Alanis Morissette happy. At Burnley, Sanders tweeted us, Tom Heaton saves everything.
Bernie Sanders tweeted us.
Burnley Sanders.
Oh, sorry, Burnley Sanders.
I think it's a joke. It's a
Bernie
great joke.
Sanders. It's a great joke.
Oh, Burnley Sanders for president. That would be amazing.
It'd be an improvement.
He said, Tom Heaton can save everything. He might be the only person on the planet who could even save the US election. I'm not sure, mate. It's a long shot, even for Tommy H. But in that first half extra time, we were given drama, Davey. The non-penalty. The non-penalty at Old Trafford to Lamb Chops. Damian.
Pogba sends the ball to Damian. Damian pretty clearly tripped up. We've seen it given. You know, he went down a little bit dramatically, Damian. In fact, he went down. It reminded me of the way the toddler falls over. Before a kid has learned how to roll like a commando and roll over, he just went down flat on his face. And I think that's what made it look a little bit more like a dive than it actually was.
I think Mark Clattenburg may have been unsighted. Flanagan's mole may have obscured his vision.
Yeah.
But you've seen him given.
Yeah.
You've always seen them given
always
at United
Old Trafford.
Always.
First half stoppage time. Are you kidding me? Always.
And to me, it was a sign of just how far the mighty have fallen. That superstar Clattenburg just had the temerity to wave it away. And what I was fascinated about, oh great Mourinho-ologist,
yeah,
was Jose's reaction. I mean, we are used to Jose Mourinho when he didn't get a call in his pomp, Davo, on the sideline. How would he react?
Well,
he reacted as if, you are wrong, objectively, an idiot, and I, omniscient God, who delivers the Ten Commandments to all, no right, and I will get you. I will get you. You are dead.
I know what you're saying, but I do think that we did start to see this woe is me, Mourinho, start to appear last season. This sort of sobbing, the whole world is conspiring against me and Chelsea, Manchester United. I think this somewhat pathetic Mourinho.
Yes, truly in the Greek pathos.
I think we started to see this last season where he feels the whole world is against him. And let's face it, 37 shots on goal, this penalty not given at Old Trafford, the kind of saves that Tom Heaton was making. His team were desperately, desperately, desperately unlucky. But there is a sense that the universe... I used to reject this when my lawyer
may be sending you a document
when
to
Mourinho
sign it. This
was
is
at
what
Chelsea.
I think it is. This is amazing. Come on, say it.
But
say it,
when
man.
When you were to say that, oh, it's because the world is the evil is this and all of those kind of things, I didn't see any of those kind of universal implications.
Yes.
But this might just be the gods.
Yes.
The gods.
Yes.
Some of them, the ones who are very interested in Premier League football.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Maybe. That the gods are just conspiring in order to make it miserable.
It's the only logical, rational reason that can underlie this narrative, Davo.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to Mourinho doing the us against the world. You are objectively wrong. I will later slay you. Or one of my sicarios will later on come into your refereeing changing room and deliver justice. This was more a shrug. The world is cruel. There is suffering for man. And there's nothing that we can do to protect myself nor my team from that suffering. It's a seismic theological difference, Dave.
It was more than a shrug, though. It was a desperate mork. It was like an awful, like, the entire world is set against me.
It was like Jonah howling on the deck of the boat when the storm was rising.
Whoa!
It's me. Mourinho is going to end up just in the belly of a whale. What we did not see was Mourinho's reaction in the tunnel. Reportedly waited at halftime to confront Clats.
Yeah.
Because he was so angry about this penalty. He's got now an FA charge to answer to in addition to the one he's already facing over remarks he aimed at Bald's Anthony Taylor head of the last game, Davo. Not good. And the second half then just became a borderline surreal spectacle as Jose went on an involuntary tour of Old Trafford.
Well, I cannot wait, by the way, to find out exactly when we see the FA inquiry what the abusive language actually used was. I just can't wait to hear the words. Going to be very, very good ones, I hope.
I hope they're worth it, David. Yeah, it's going to cost him.
Yeah, he gets banished to the stands almost exactly a year to the date that he was banished to the stands at Upton Park after that Matic red card that he was very unhappy about.
One minute he was sat sadly in an obstructive view seat behind a yellow gate.
Yeah, he didn't go a long way into the stands initially.
The next, he was suddenly cropping up, surrounded by real United fans, including a ginger.
Yeah.
And the look on his face just said, peasants. the next time we saw him.
Not that you're reading anything into it at
somehow,
all.
Somehow, Dave, and I don't know if he was like a teleporter or in between these shots, he was actually escorted there by security. Next, he was in the director's box.
Yeah.
Just glad they didn't move him any further
back. Yeah, the fourth official moving him further and further.
Half expected to see him next, sat in a car park attendant's booth behind the stadium, Dave. I mean, we were just treated to scenes of Mourinho futilely dispatching hand-scribbled messages to the bench.
Yeah, who knows what they were. I'd love to see them.
I'm guessing they just said, we are so...
It was something, Rog. And yet, he was getting some phenomenal performances out on the pitch. I thought Pogba looked fantastic in this game. He looked more alive, more involved, more energy. Finally looked like he had that sort of, you know, Premier League deportment. Like, it was getting the pace of the game. I thought Mata was fantastic. I just thought they looked really, really good. Burnley do get it up against the big teams, Rog, and Burnley barely had a chance in the game.
But what shocks me, Davo, is that when it came to substitutes to change the game after Herrera, definitely unfortunate to be sent off, United down to 10 men. What does he do? He yanks off Juan Mata, not Zlatan, who we'll talk about in a second. But when he took off Mata, who'd been possibly the brightest spark for Manchester United in this game, it gave me a sense of what Mourinho must be dealing with. I think part of the answer for Mourinho's dismal inability, because we are seeing endgame Mourinho right now. This is not the Mourinho that descends upon a club and just wreaks order in the most diabolical but impressive fashion. This is the unravelling Mourinho. I think part of the reason for his inability to do what he normally does, to get to the grips of the core of United's problems, was probably hinted at by yesterday's full-blown press conference at Old Trafford, which they gave to announce their new five-year deal with Millie, Manchester United's first ever mattress and pillow partner.
Yeah.
Don't know how they got away without one for so long, Dave.
Yeah.
But you realise this is really a club being run for commercial gain with potato snack partners, tractor engine sponsorships. I mean, the big brand players, they keep saying they're not untouchable, but they're really billboards, social media drivers first. They're kind of tactical operatives on the field second. And I think that's probably a huge amount of the problem for him.
Yeah, you keep on saying this, and I keep on not believing it. And what I'm starting to realise is that I just don't want to believe it. I just don't want to believe that the commercial imperative at a football club is driving the decisions that would affect the actual football team. Because I think that is a level beyond where we've been with any Premier League team ever before. And I suppose because I don't want to believe it, I just can't believe it.
Well, whatever, whether I am telling you things that are only known to the Illuminati, or whether I am purposely pissing on your enjoyment of football, which I don't never want to do, Dave. I think we both agree, this does look like endgame, awful like endgame.
Yeah, I do need to check under your pants and see if you're wearing one of those garter straps with like nails in it to like cause a lot of pain.
I am, but I'm just wearing it for comfort. To me, I was watching this game and my head kept synapsing, my mind kept synapsing, and I saw Mourinho 1 second, and then the next second as he was sitting in those stands, I just saw Napoleon. Another famed leader of men who was vanquished and then exiled. He had a year on Elba. Like Mourinho, had a little time out of the game. Elba, that island of 12,000 inhabitants on which he was imprisoned to create peace in Europe.
Yep.
They gave him sovereignty over the island. Uh-huh. They allowed him to retain... I love this fact. They allowed him to retain the title of emperor. That was part of his negotiation on this tiny crap island.
That's what was important to him.
Yeah, it's important for Klamberg too.
Yeah, are you listening to that, Anthony Weiner?
Yes. He escaped.
Yeah.
And then he had a 100-day second wind that led to his ultimate defeat at Waterloo. To me, Mourinho is Napoleon. He's still a leader with vaunted glories, but he's Napoleon emerging from exile, just a faded, humbled man, ultimately doomed to defeat by his opponents, by life. He's got a Mkhitaryan issue.
Yeah.
He's got a Rooney issue. Yeah. He's still got a Pogba issue, Davo.
Yeah.
The Zlatan issue, the Martial issue, the defensive back four issue. Fighting so many battles on so many fronts. In this game, it was really a Zlatan issue. Zlatan is not the lethal, self-starred last samurai that it says on the box. He's looked more like the doorman at the second best nightclub in Wheeling, West Virginia for much of this season. That's the issue of the day.
And yet, had one of these shots gone in, had Tom Heaton not made one of those saves...
12 shots from Zlatan, one of those 12, you
had think. There been a penalty given at the end of first half stoppage time, Man United would be on 17 points this morning. they would be just 6 points behind the leaders, just 5 points behind Chelsea. We might be having a different conversation. I remind the bench that just a few weeks ago, we were half believing rumours that Antonio Conte was out at Chelsea.
We never believe them. We're going to talk about
it. Oh, I did. I did believe them for a second because I thought anything is possible and he's lost a couple of games. It's not going to be good. Chelsea have gone on a four-game winning streak. A lot can change. Like, the narrative swings so wildly.
Not on this show, David.
Okay, so we're sticking to this one and we're not moving it. I don't know. I think had this Man United performance, the only thing about this, had the Man United performance... And I know that the object of football, and I say it a lot, is to put the ball in the back of the net and
is
win
to
a
sell
Burnley.
Millie.
Burnley
bed deserve, mattresses.
Burnley deserve a lot of credit for fighting, and Tom Heaton is a Burnley player, and Tom Heaton deserves credit for like shutting them out. The object of the game is to put the ball in the back of the net. Having said that, had this been a terrible performance, it was not a terrible performance, I would be more worried about Man United. I think they're going to be okay. Do I think they are in my top four at the end of the season? I'm a little worried about it. But I do think that there is not a lot of difference between any of these teams in the Premier League. I just don't think there's a lot of difference.
Yes, they could have netted 6 or 7 goals in this game. But we said the same after the Stoke draw, Davo. They should have won, but they didn't win. And this is Burnley, Davo, at Old Trafford, vaunted Old Trafford. I mean, Burnley were phenomenal. Their defending was phenomenal. Their organisation was phenomenal. And when their organisation wasn't phenomenal, Tom Heaton was there. When he wasn't there, the post was there. But there's a lack of clinicality. There's a lack of precision by players once feared and much touted. When Zlatan arrived, he tweeted out, "I am coming." Which is kind of like, it sounded so amazing and exciting. It's now like, it's like us shouting out, "I am coming" when we open a Guinness. That's how exciting it's really been. And the big question I'm trying to understand now, Davo, is what exactly can Mourinho do to change this? He's gone and got bloody Bastian Schweinsteiger back in training. Truly an amazing spectacle. Mm. I mean, is he going to reinstall Wayne Rooney and Bastian? Less release the hounds, more release the two broken souls from the dungeons after I flogged them mercilessly for the last month. It's like Theon Greyjoy escaping from the bastard Bolton.
Where's Phil Jones?
Yeah, get me Jones!
Yeah.
He's the one and true saviour. I mean, that thin, watery, odd smile that Mourinho emitted, it was a Hillary Clinton campaign trail smile, David. Mm. And that's the astonishing thing about this whole thing. What did Mourinho used to love in his pomp at Chelsea? He used to love taking on teams, superior teams, and just nullifying their strengths, rendering them impotent, emasculating them by not allowing them to score. And that's how he's suffering now with United week after week after week, how it must torture him. And I will say, theologically, Davo, I think you look at him, he is now probably the greatest living case you can make for karma actually existing in the world.
Yeah, and yet the last time he won the title, Rog, with Chelsea in 2014-2015, I was at that game against Burnley at Fortress Stamford Bridge when it ended up a 1-1 draw. And, you know, these are things that happen in the Premier League. And I'm not, by the way, I'm to some extent taking a different point of view, partly because you never know what's going to happen in the Premier League and partly to be, you know, make this more interesting. But I still feel as though, and this must be what is so frustrating for Man United fans, that really good football, they keep on waiting for great football to break out. And they have the thing that happened midweek, the game against Man City in the English Football League Cup. Surely now we're going to have an explosion. Now one of these shots is going to go in. Now it's going to happen. And I still think it can happen. What busts me so frustrating is it's not happening.
Eighth position behind Watford. 13 goals scored all season. 5 back from the Champions League pace setters, Davo. We were going to say congratulations, Burnley. First away point of the season. Mid-table security of 11 points reached. Yeah. All hail Ginger Mourinho.
And they've done well against the big teams, Roger. Win against Liverpool, draw against Man United. They beat your beloved Everton.
Yeah, you're talking about the big teams, anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the top, you know, third of the table, Rog. They are capable on their day, and they seem to always get it up for the big teams. They're capable of hurting teams.
Quick thing on Sean Dyche.
Yeah.
45 years of age. Find it fascinating that he's still shaving his sideburns into long points.
Yeah. At what point do you stop doing that? Do you just give up?
I don't know. It's some kind of a statement. I just do not understand what it's a statement. A part of me is is just appalled by it. The other half just got a begrudging respect.
It's good shape on his face. I think he looks like Louis C.K.
I think he looks like the Premier League star Burns from Community.
Okay. Let's go to some goals, Rog. Sunderland 1, Arsenal 4, Alexis Sanchez and Olivier Giroud. Braces keep Arsene Wenger's men top of the table on points.
trailing only Man City on goal difference. Sunderland, meanwhile, are winless in their first 10 games. I think that's a Premier League record, Rog. And have Jermaine Defoe wishing he'd never left Toronto. Yeah, I'm sure that's what he's thinking.
Oh, the score actually belies an odd game. Such a melange of narratives. It felt like a jump cut in a movie. One jump cut after another. Arsenal dominant. Sunderland down and out. Suddenly they forced themselves back into the game. And it felt like Arsenal were going to do that Arsenal-y wobble. But then they snapped out of cruise control, clicked up several gears, and absolutely demolished David Moyes and his team. God, I've got to say, Sunderland, such little resistance I've rarely seen in a football team in the Premier League. Said on the show, a group of 11 children dressed up,
I love this,
as professional footballers for Halloween would probably have provided a sterner challenge ultimately for Arsene Wenger's team. That opening goal, Davey, just methodical, well-drilled comfort in possession. Only arguably Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City could score one like this. 22 passes, many of them one or two touch. You could say encouraged by Sunderland's defensive switch-offs all along the back line. And then the Ox just swung in that cracking ball past and overcommitted one more. And who just drove through the middle?
Oh, their big man in the middle, Rog. 5 foot 7 inch, if you can believe the stats. Alexis Sanchez.
Like Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah.
My God. I mean, just all intelligence, movement, desire and courage to head home at a gorgeous angle. You loved it.
Oh, it was seventh great goal of the season. It's the kind of goal you don't see very often and you wish you did see more. You see it occasionally in EA Sports FIFA, Rog, that sort of diving between two defenders, getting to the ball, glancing it at the perfect angle into the side netting. It was a fantastic goal. The Ox, the reborn Ox, Rog, this is very good news for Arsenal fans. You know, they need a large squad of players playing well, more than 11 players playing well in order to go and contend for the Premier League title, Rog. And I think him coming back strong is a very, very good sign for this side.
Arsenal toyed with Sunderland though, David. They should have put them away.
Yeah.
And they couldn't be bothered putting them away.
Yeah.
And there was a weird reprise. Watmore brought down by Cech.
Yeah.
Defoe's penalty. Started to ask questions of Arsenal. There's this whole November narrative that they are a team that threatens to make a title challenge and they just absolutely fall away with injuries and impotent performances in November. It felt like, could this be a winter is coming situation before the end of October? But Arsene Wenger just calmly looked down his bench, pointed to the lumber sexual, and said, go and do it, lad.
Yeah, 69th minute, he brings on Giroud. Giroud, less than 2 minutes after coming on, Kieran Gibbs races down the left, another squad player doing very, very well for Arsenal, puts the ball in, and Olivier Giroud gets on the end of it. Seems to sort of re-angle his body, takes it from behind him, and a smashing finish.
The first touch. The touch of a tender lover. He actually scored with his second touch too. Two goals, his first two since the last day of last season. And with that beard, oh, that beard that just, anyone of the Mosaic persuasion will agree with me, looks like the most erotic, handsome, athletic rabbi of all times. Arsenal fans delirious. Zlatan, 5 games, no goals. Giroud, 5 minutes, 2 goals. At Jovo, 558. Asked, was this the greatest comeback since Steve Jobs returned to Apple? It was better than that, mate. It was. And the question is, Davo, should Arsenal always be playing him?
Yeah, well, this is causing some issues for Arsene Wenger now. He got used to playing Sanchez as sort of in that, you know, whatever it is, a false nine or in that lone striker role.
Soft core.
Yes, whatever it is, torture porn. But it's selection problems are good. I mean, he's delighted to have selection problems, delighted to have a striker who's putting the ball in the back of the net. This is good for Arsenal. Like, this is not a problem, Arsenal
fans.
Yeah, that's
what Arsenal said.
This is good for Arsenal.
So, I mean, they should definitely, definitely play Giroud whenever they play teams like Sunderland, who would struggle to win games if they're in the NASL. Against more nuanced opponents, just the intelligence of Sanchez up top makes him look so much better, so much more balanced, so much more threatening. Arsene was asked if he might start playing 4-4-2, have them both take the field. He just smiled and said, maybe. Adding, let's not create problems when we have none right now. Talking about problems, oh, David Moyes on the other sideline, Davo, a grim sight, that steely yet forlorn stare of a man hopelessly lost at sea. How has this happened? Do you remember when I loved him? Do you remember when I adored him at Everton? When he was so in control? I am not a quitter!
Well, remember when he was in complete control of his own career. You know, maybe beloved at Everton is an overstatement, but yep. certainly compared to the way they felt about Martinez, I think he was, you know, by comparison, loved. He left there of his own accord. Disastrous tenure at Man United.
Possibly the most disastrous tenure for any manager yeah. in the modern period. I mean, Sam Allardyce went to Newcastle, got spat out quickly,
yeah.
but seemed to rebound quite well to stagger through great opportunity yeah. after great opportunity. I mean, David Moyes, he seems broken, David.
Yeah, and then the period in Spain.
Broken. I mean, both in the eyes of his charges, the players, but also inside, his own confidence, once yeah. unshakable. He's like a kid who can't swim, who fell once in the deep end of the pool, and is just forever traumatised being out of his depth. And from a human perspective, I'll say watching David Moyes, for me, is painful to watch and awfully familiar. But we'll talk about that another day. But a final whistle.
He may be replaced by Big Sam, Rog.
Oh, please.
Big Sam, who did such an amazing
please,
job.
Please, narrative
at gods,
and then bring up Aston Villa, so we're gifted with the Bruce back in our loving yeah. arms. The Sunderland's record, played 10, lost 8, 2 points, minus 13 goal difference, worst Premier League start to the season of all time. Afterwards, Moyes admitted, I don't know why he said this to the press, but my God, maybe it just comes out at this point.
It does make me feel lousy, and I do. I don't feel good about it, but you've got to take it. I probably spend Saturday night, and quite often, in a darkened room somewhere. Maybe in a whale, Rog.
It's called a sad nap, David.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Welcome, David. Friend.
But you David should, Moyes.
You should never have let DeAndre Yedlin go, mate.
Oh, that was it.
I feel sorry for the Sunderland fans. 44,322 of them
yeah.
at the Stadium of Light, which yeah. you love the name of.
Ironically named.
It's so astonishing devotion in the face of yeah. self-evident doom. It's such a proud city. They're so in love with their football club. All it gives them back is pain, Dave. I mean, just mismanagement, a revolving door of managers, players. And they normally need an early managerial firing to kickstart their
season.
Yeah,
exactly, to get them in the mood.
But they may have left it too late already, yeah. David. Well, say for Arsenal, November rears its head. Mm. The month when they normally go into a tailspin. Last year, they began by losing 5-1 to Bayern Munich. They drew with Tottenham and Norwich, lost to West Brom. Always, always damage their chances of domestic glory, of European glory. This season, well done, script writers.
Yeah.
Forthcoming games against Tottenham.
Amazing.
And Manchester United.
Amazing.
For Arsenal fans, like a flaming pit and a fraying rope bridge just on the horizon.
We are going to learn a lot about Arsenal Football Club over the next couple of weeks, Rog. Okay, talk about learning a lot. Crystal Palace 2, Liverpool 4. A Liverpool performance replete with savant football, head-scratching mistakes, and a shirtless Roberto Firmino.
Those are all the traditional Liverpool tropes. Just a normal
goals
weekend, then.
From Emre Can, Dejan Lovren, Joel Matip, and the aforementioned tattooed Brazilian keep Liverpool level with Arsenal and City atop the table. They're in third place on goal difference. Right?
Fascinating, Dave. A weekend after which Ryan Giggs had raised the question, do Liverpool need a 20-goal-a-season striker to be considered true title contenders?
Oh, yeah.
They go and do this. I mean, just no front four attack space better than Liverpool football clubs right now.
Yeah.
No traditional strikers needed, i.e. Daniel Sturridge. They've got Coutinho, Firmino, Mane, Lallana.
I mean, that goal, though, magnificent sequence of Liverpool passes, ends up with Emre Can in the area. He manages to rebound it off one of Scott Dan's ankles.
Childhood Liverpool fan, Scott
Dan.
Great,
great goal.
You know, the only problem with those kind of goals for Liverpool, they're just so routine at this point. We forget how truly thrilling and how hard that kind of team play is to pull off. But Palace benefited from Lovren's clown defending to quickly equalise. He kicked the ball weakly towards a nervy Karius, utterly betraying him.
Yeah.
But within 180 seconds, we witnessed the redemption of Lovren.
Yes, bounce back ability. Yeah, from the Coutinho corner, the big Croatian rises above Scott Dan.
Childhood Liverpool fan.
Yeah, fairly big defending. And heads it home. Fantastic finish.
What a player he is, Lovren. He's like that laughing with tears emoji made utterly real. He just needed to add a red card for the John Terry hat-trick. But as Mike Myers would say, denied at Dev Burton. Liverpool games are the equivalent of Big 12 football. Hashtag defences for losers. We say about Liverpool a lot to come, but this is a very different Palace team to last season, the ones who charged up the flanks with flair, flickering to thrill. I mean, they just seem to live and die with the lachrymose Benteke. If ever there was like a footballer who more seemed like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, They were probably hard done to. Series of penalty possibilities, none given.
Yes, particularly the one on Zaha.
And then Firmino finished the game off with that deft chop after a fine ball low from Hendo. What I loved about the goal, Davo, you can actually see the second Firmino decides to whip his jersey off and get a yellow card. Happens right before he shoots.
They score so many different kinds of goals, Liverpool. They really just they use all the colours in the palette. To go and score.
And so many different kinds of goal scorers, Davo.
Yeah,
as this day kind of shows. But Firmino, what a key player he is. Just his movement seems to tear defences apart with his big, new, made of wood white teeth, Davo. I love him.
They remind me of my beloved Orlando Magic. The only two times that the Orlando Magic in my whatever...
In the little penny days.
In my 27-year fandom of that team. The only times they've ever been good is when they had multiple scorers. So in the era one, when they had Dennis Scott, Nick Anderson and Shaq, who could all hurt you. And then in the second era, when they had Dwight Howard kicking it out to Rashard Lewis, so many people who could hurt you. And that's they're sort of that kind of thing. They're sort of an NBA squad with very, very balanced scoring.
Where does this NBA squad with very balanced scoring end up, Davo? Because this is the best start for Liverpool in 8 years. They are undoubtedly right now the most thrilling team to watch. So cunning, so ripe. So much menace. I mean, so expert at tearing apart average defences, in my mind, because they spend so much time in training playing against a deeply, deeply flawed defence, their own. They've netted 79 goals since Jurgen Klopp took charge.
That's such an interesting point. They gain so much confidence playing against their own defence in training.
Yeah.
That's why they're so good at finishing.
Absolutely.
That's the problem at Man United.
Attackers.
Their defence is too good.
They're attackers. Think that all defenders are utterly morons because the defenders they know best.
Yeah.
Love them.
That's brilliant.
Yeah,
that
they've
is
got
absolutely
no,
brilliant.
We respect no defenders. Why is that?
Yeah.
Because they're playing with
Alberto Moreno.
Sure, James Milner's walking around, they'd be like, lads, I'm a converted midfielder. All right, don't lump me in with those losers.
Yeah.
But they've scored so many goals under Klopp, 79 more than anybody else in the competition. They are so confident, so full of self-loathing at the back. Just a team of mood swings. Are they real title chasers, though, David? Because Klopp, I'll say after the game, pretended they weren't in the most endearing but slightly disingenuous way. He said, I've no idea.
The only thing I'd say, this is my only reservation, and I do think Liverpool are for real, and I think Liverpool are absolutely title contenders. My only reservation is looking back a couple of fixtures ago and the way that Man United neutralised Liverpool in that game, Rog. Because that is where, if you can stop Liverpool from playing football... And if you could then get a little bit of luck at the other end, I do think that they can be stymied. And I think a lot of other teams are going to be looking at that Man United performance and looking at how to like stop that midfield engine, stop them being able to get between the lines, stop their left back being able to make it to the byline. I think that has been my only criticism. It's not about them leaking goals because, you know, as you and I spoke about yesterday, they might change the definition of what it takes. You might not need a 20-goal striker. You might not need to have the best defensive record in the Premier League. It might just be enough to outscore teams the way that Kevin Keegan tried to do when he was manager of Newcastle and failed, but it might be possible with this squad, with these players.
Yeah, at Sports with John, our great friend John Green tweeted, if the point of human life is to create something beautiful which has never before existed, Coutinho has achieved enlightenment, which I love. I mean, Liverpool's back four, if they had a quarter of the ability of their front four, they'd be a powerhouse. They'd be unstoppable. They do seem to be the only Premier League team whose defence would be shored up if they actually pulled their goalkeeper NHL style. But I believe in Klopp, Davo. Giggs can say, you need a 20-goal-a-season scorer to win the league. That's common logic. Klopp's a man that just defies common logic. And in this season of curiosity, I mean, his own maverick path towards fumbling greatness. I believe in a maverick path this season, Dave. If I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be incredibly bullish.
Okay, Roger, another team looking very, very good this weekend. West Brom, no, not them, nil. Manchester City, 4. Pep Guardiola takes out the stress of a 6-game winless streak by bludgeoning the heavy bag that is Tony Pulis's side. 2 goals, thud, thud, thud. 2 goals from Sergio Aguero and 2 from Ilkay Gundogan see City stay at the Premier League's apex.
Oh, the haters were swirling. The rubberneckers poised to descend. And Schadenfreude frenzy was on the horizon.
Mm.
Manchester City just calmly roll out to unfurl their most dominant performance of the season.
Yeah.
They scored early.
Mm.
They scored late. Kind of rompish win. Pep Guardiola will remember from such movies. as Barcelona 1-2 and 3 and Bayern murdering the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
What can we say? I mean, this is a dominant performance. West Brom had only one shot on target, 30% possession. Pulis going to Pulis.
Yeah, exactly. But a standard kind of West Brom performance.
But City were so good. Absolutely so good. They couldn't get near enough City to kick them, Davey.
Yeah, Tony Pulis does not like it when teams go into the Hawthorns and play football.
Yeah, and unfortunately for them, they didn't do what everyone has done to City in the past 4 weeks, which is to press them high up the field.
Yeah.
Well, at least they didn't do that until the second half when the game was beyond them. City tore at their opponents from the start with tempo, movement, verve, clinicality, which made West Brom's traditionally, how would you say it, robust approach just seem heavy-legged and slow-minded. Couldn't have gone better from the start.
Aguero coming back into scoring form, that is super, super important for Manchester City and their title aspirations.
After half a dozen games without a goal, his demise greatly exaggerated. I say that second goal, when he wriggled free and unleashed a thumping strike, it reminded me of Joel Embiid's wise words earlier in the week. He can't guard me. The only real pleasure for West Brom fans was celebrating every second of their team's aforementioned 30% possession. They spent the second half singing, "We've got the ball, we've got the ball," when their team had it, and then immediately switching to, "We've lost the ball," when City took it back off them. It's a simple pleasure in life, David.
Yeah, what did they spend more time singing, Rog? I think 70% we lost the ball.
City, back from the dead, like Phil Collins, Phil Bloody Collins, singing "Air Tonight" with Questlove and The Roots on Jimmy Fallon, David.
Interesting stuff, Rod. Certainly Manchester City, they terrify me when they're playing like that. I think they're amazing. Southampton, 0. Chelsea, 2. In scorelines that made Jose Mourinho's weekend even worse news, Eden Hazard and Diego Costa goals gave Chelsea a comprehensive win at St Mary's. Chelsea are 4th, just 1 point off the leaders, Rod.
I said they're going to win it all. They remind me of Rachel Lee Cook at the end of She's All That, just shaking down her hair to transform herself from dorky, artistic outcast Luna. She's not that, Davo. She's a beautiful object of lusty desire. And that September 24 3-0 humiliation for Chelsea at the hands of Arsenal, which made them seem brittle also, Rans. You've now had this extreme tactical makeover, the 3-4-3, and the beauty is oozed out of every pore, even Antonio Conte's. Your side, Davo, have scored more goals, conceded less than any other team over the course of the last 4 games.
Yeah, we always talk about managers and how much influence they have. What's that Trapattoni line, Rog?
That a good manager can make a team 10% better. A bad manager / David Moyes can make them 30% worse.
Yeah, I think Chelsea are a lot more than 10% better this season. He's done so many things. It's not just the tactical switch. It's how hard he's got players like Eden Hazard working, getting back behind the ball. The discovery of fringe squad players who spent most of their Chelsea careers out on loan.
Like Victor Diego Costa? No, you're calling him a fringe squad player?
No, Victor Moses. The performance he's getting out of Victor Moses is just amazing. It's actually really heartening for a player I've always liked. It just makes you feel good. There haven't been many feel-good stories at Chelsea over the last few years.
I feel great about him, David.
Yeah.
I really do. So ebullient, so disciplined at both ends of the field. I think he must be running on the adrenaline that he finally matters, David.
Yeah.
After 4 years in the Chelsea wilderness, he's finally valued. He's a shoo-in for the first 11.
Yeah.
He said, "I'm looking forward to every game," he told reporters with just this giddy delight. And I wonder what he must feel inside, just human vindication, the slowly burning sense of redemption. I love watching him. Eden Hazard, 3 goals in consecutive games for the first time. And your bigly bad hombre, Diego Costa, scoring from David.
Outside the area. I know, it's just stuff.
He's only done that once before.
I know, we're not used to seeing it. And actually behaving pretty well throughout the entire game. It's a remarkable thing. Gary Cahill just looks like a different defender in a 3-man defence than he looks in a 4-man defence.
Well, that is the most shocking narrative twist of all, David. Just that resurgent backline. Mm. I mean, they have now gone 410 minutes without conceding a Premier League goal. Yes, Gary Cahill, the Corky St. Clair in cleats. David Luiz, who is undoubtedly the scariest clown, even amidst this current scary clown epidemic that we are all toiling against. An HR Block Spanish representative, Cesar Azpilicueta.
Yeah.
More Spanish middle manager than football. They have become, Davo, just absolute lockdown artists. And this is against Southampton, an opponent to be reckoned with. I don't mean to belittle Manchester United, because we've done that enough for the last couple of pods. this is definitely Chelsea's best performance, their best win of the season, their most impressive signal of intent.
Yeah, no, it was a good win. It was a good performance, a lot of discipline. Another very hard game for them coming up this weekend, Rog, the Men in Blazers derby, the El Blazerico.
Stop patronising, mate.
No, Everton had a fantastic win.
Stop bigging yourself up for when you win.
This weekend, a fantastic win this weekend. But I think, look, this was a good performance. Four wins on the trot. That's the best form in the Premier League over four games. And, you know, players really looking forward to every game, not just Victor Moses.
I mean, I love narrative football swings. It was just 2 weeks ago, though, as you said, that the bookies stopped taking bets on Conte being fired. Now he's a title-winning manager pretend, and things are so good that no one's even talking about Cesc Fabregas, who's sunken so low below the waterline. There's barely a ripple in terms of intrigue or news. The English papers are too busy reporting in fawning way on the way that Conte imports honey cough sweets from Italy to soothe his sore throat, which he chaps while shouting at his players on the training ground. Yeah. But I've been bullish on Chelsea all season, mostly because I watched Conte in Italy, came through in my beloved Siena. Mm. And I know he's got tenacity, tactical judgment. He has got just the drive of a winner. How good are they now in your mind?
Well, look, they do depend on their 20-goal-a-season striker. They depend on Diego Costa. Bats, we don't know a lot about him yet. He hasn't played a lot. He hasn't scored a lot. And I think if Costa goes down, you worry about exactly what will happen. Pretty much around the rest of the pitch, that squad is fairly deep. They've got a lot of players. Zouma's coming back. Marco van Ginkel's coming back. Remember him? They've got a few players coming back from injury. So I think they're going to be good. It's just all the teams at the top are very good, Rog. And it's going to come down to key moments. It's going to come down to a lack of injuries, suspensions, dodgy red cards, penalties not given. It's going to come down that at the sharp end of the season.
It's going to come down to cough sweets, mate.
Yeah, pretty much.
This time last year, Chelsea were in 15th place, 13 points off first. Mm. Now they are fourth, just 1 point from the pinnacle.
Okay, another contender, Rog, against last year's champions. Tottenham 1, Leicester 1. Mauricio Pochettino's mob drew first blood in the 44th minute when Vincent Janssen struck from the penalty spot. But 3 minutes after halftime, Ahmed Musa latched onto a Jamie Vardy pullback to secure Leicester's first away point of the season. Spurs stay unbeaten, but float further adrift from the league leaders. They're fifth, 3 points off the pace. Leicester at 11th.
Tottenham Hotspur are Liverpool in reverse. Mm. Lockdown misers at the back, cumbersome up front without Harold Kane. Mm. 14 goals they've scored this season, 9 less than Arsenal and City. And their front line so static. I mean, even more so at the weekend when Son toiled and Eriksen was there in body but not in mind, which meant they lacked any kind of creativity at all as Leicester arrived, having lost all four on the road. So they sat deep, dead Spurs to break them down. They did so with a slightly dodgy penalty, made and taken by much maligned Vincent Janssen. They were then punished by Wanyama's unwise backheader, intercepted by Jamie Vardy, who charged forward like a sable ferret heading down a hole, rolling the ball across the face of goal for Musa to jab home. Amazingly, Davo, first goal Spurs have conceded from open play this season. Final score, Washington 27, Cincinnati 27.
Yeah, it was. It was a tie. We need a field goal kickoff.
Slightly awkward feeling around Spurs right now.
Yeah.
They're unbeaten, but they've been on a 5-match winless run. Odd, gravity-less feeling. Poch bemoaned just a lack of clinicality. Not just a striker. Our second line needs to be more direct, more aggressive. His Spurs, though, have drawn more games, 17, than any other Premier League side over the course of last season. And this, at Volkswagen, good thing we're unbeatable because we're not going to win anything.
We will see. I think a lot is going to turn on the form of Dele Alli and Harry Kane when he gets back into the side, Rog. Okay, here's another impressive performance. Everton 2, West Ham 0.
Build us up to knock us down, David.
No, I think this is an impressive performance. Ronald Koeman, Ronaldo, dispatches an Aaron Cresswell-led West Ham side that hadn't yet lost in October. Goals from Romelu Lukaku and a relieved Ross Barkley earn Everton their first win in 6 games and put them 6th, Rog, very much in touch.
Yeah, but we hadn't won since September 17th, so this was a huge, huge relief, a much-needed tonic. A weekend that began with a chunky Dutchman casting come-hither eyes at another bulky ex-footballer, Wayne Rooney. Mm. When asked if he'd come back to Everton, Ronaldo said, "Even if one time there is a possibility that Rooney is an option for Everton, I'd say yes, please." a number of Evertonians analysed that Koeman was just talking at Rooney as a way to shock jumpstart Ross Barkley's stuttering season. Dave, I've got to ask
That's interesting. Great man management.
He was just the storyline of this game. But what do you think of Ross from an outside clinical detail? I love him too much, Dave. It hurts too much. Tell me what you think of him.
So I feel like when we've talked about him in the past, not on the pod, when you're not just performing, Rog, when presumably you're telling me the truth, that I'm much keener on Ross Barkley. That I'm much keener on Ross Barkley than you are. I think he's a great player. I watched him live last season against Chelsea, and I was so impressed. His physical strength, his speed, he's constantly on. He's constantly buzzing around. He plays so well without the ball. I know his decision making is what is always questioned. You hope that with age and experience, his decision making is going to get better. But he's a good footballer.
He's a 22-year-old on one hand, yes. But at the other point, he's definitely an inflection point in his career. Young English talent who's become really a figure of self doubt, born of, as you said, terrible decision making. When he gets the ball, he always holds on to it forever, cedes possession. Here he's brought back to the side. At the beginning, he had the confidence of a baby foal taking first steps as West Ham charged into the game, playing like a team just so happy to be out of their home crap home, London Stadium.
Ugh.
Everton were overwhelmed, but the Blues, different team in the second half. Bolasie, God love him. I've rarely seen an Evertonian player show such desire to pick up a scrap in the box. Propelled it across the face of the goal, Rom nodded it home.
Mm.
Contractually obliged goal for him against West Ham. Bolasie, 4 goals now he's set up for Rom this season, more than any other player in the Premier League, which I think is absolutely, gives me the biggest tiny slice of hope for next weekend. Ross then added a second with a fine finish.
Great finish.
God, when he celebrated, that mixture of elation and relief and self-doubt shucked. Ross Barkley, he is risen. Huge win for Everton. Because there was a great article in one of the Irish newspapers by your favourite player, Stephen Hunt.
Yeah, love him.
Talked about the notion of form, how it impacts a locker room. He said the lack of it creates an anxiety, which just infects the team psychologically. So to me, this was more than 3 points. It kind of snapped a grating streak ahead of the biggest clash of the season. Everton at Stamford Bridge.
Mm.
El Blazerico.
Yeah.
Completely different to travel up there having won, Davo, rather than being winless in 5.
And also having beaten the team that beat Chelsea midweek in the Football League Cup. You know, Everton are better than West Ham. West Ham better than Chelsea. Ergo, Everton go into this game at Stamford Bridge. Clear favourites to go and win it. It would take a lot for us to beat the team that beat us.
People can't see this because it's a podcast, but David is patting me symbolically on the head as he's doing it while stroking a little menacing white cat. So it was a really funny moment that will bond us, David, because Everton were denied a clear penalty at the final whistle. And there was an Everton fan very close to the microphones.
Oh, yeah.
And he started to scream bloody murder at referee Lee Mason. Even though it was another bald ref, Anthony Taylor, who was actually the match official. It's that moment when I realised we balds all look the same.
We all look the same.
To the ably haired, we all look the same to you.
We all look the same, Rog.
Yeah, that's Statham. Michael Davis and Statham on Men in Blazers. Awful.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Middlesbrough 2, Bournemouth 0, Rog. A galloping Gaston Ramirez run. That really was a galloping Gaston Ramirez run. And finish highlights Borough's second win since returning to the top flight. Aitor Karanka's team just 3 points clear of the drop zone. But playing good football, Rog. Bournemouth in 10th place, a good team. This was a good win, Rog. Watford 1, Hull City 0. The Hornets claim all 3 points despite not registering a single shot on target. In the 82nd minute, Tigers captain Michael Dawson turned Daryl Janmaat's cross into his own net, leaving Hull without a league win since August 20th. Watford, meanwhile, move into 7th place ahead of, you've guessed it, Manchester United.
No, they may be above United, but this is football, Dave. United rained 37 shots on Burnley, didn't score.
Mm.
Watford didn't manage a single shot on target against Hull. And won 1-0 thanks to an own goal.
Yeah.
That is football.
That is football, exactly. And finally, Rog, Stoke 3, Swansea 1.
God. Flag at half mile.
We all know the old English football axiom. Can he do it on a cold, rainy Monday night at the Bet lowercase b 365 Stadium? Bob Bradley's task was made tougher by two former Swansea men, Joe Allen, what a player, and Wilfred Boney. The latter scored twice, leaving the Swans in 19th place, and Bob Bradley, the American, with just 1 point in his first 3 games.
God.
He wasn't brought in to beat teams like Arsenal. He was brought in to beat teams like Stoke.
and Watford before that, David. Mm. And this is the dark, dark reality that is now biting at the final whistle. Swansea's ninth match without a win. Their worst run since promotion to the top flight in 2011. Not Bob Bradley's fault to a large extent, but it is all going to stick to him unless he can turn this team around and quickly. Because the big question going into this was, how has Bob's magic impacted his Swansea charges? And we only had to wait 2 minutes and 50 seconds to find out.
Yeah.
Dismal, dismal defending. Credit his team, though, Dave. You always love bounce back ability. And less than 5 minutes later.
Yeah, they're literally their first attack, Rog. Amazing ball from Sigurdsson. What a player he is. At least he looks out on the field and he sees one truly, truly gifted player. Ball comes in from Sigurdsson, headed home by Wayne Routledge.
Yeah, but in the second half, really, Stoke took over. Ramadan, 19-year-old Cairo-born prodigy, just waltzed through the weak underbelly of the Swansea defence, stabbed the ball home off Alfie Mawson, who actually prodded it over his own line and became the first Englishman to score for Stoke in 47 games. Probably my favourite statistic of the weekend. Swansea had their chances. Mo Barrow, Wayne Routledge, both raced through, made terrible decisions, wrong pass. Mm. Probably should have had a penalty when Routledge was brought down on the edge of the area. But it's very hard to play the kind of positive football Bob wants through Barrow, Routledge and the always willing Gylfi, when the defence that's still got the physical and emotional scars left by Ashley Williams decamping so easily undone. At Noel Laguna's tweeted us, poor Bobby Brads. He got cold night at Stoke. It's like the English version of getting CONCACAF'd in El Salvador.
Yeah.
It wasn't a terrible performance, though, David.
It was not a terrible performance. That's the saddest part. And yet, it was against Stoke. And you look at them, you think, oh, they can play good football. But they were the team just a point or two out of the drop zone coming into the weekend, Rog. And they should be able to perform well against Stoke.
I'll say the positives, his team never gave up. They just lack quality at both ends of the field. Only Gylfi seems to believe he's actually going to score when he enters the final third. They've got United at home and then Everton away. To me, looking at this squad, there's not a lot Bob can do until January in the transfer window. He can get some fresh bodies in. Mm-hmm. But by then, I feel it'll be too late. And I do worry, Davo, because with no wins, he's in danger of this issue of his lack of experience being used against him in the brutal court of public opinion. And he knows it. He says it's a huge job we have. And knew that from the start. You come in, you look at the fixtures lying ahead. It's not like you do it with the guarantee of points. The headline in the South Wales Evening Post, which I always read every day, even before Bob Bradley landed there.
You've always loved it.
I've always loved it. I like the women's page.
Yeah.
14 years
also
of...
Also the crossword.
At the gardening.
Yeah.
They're very good coverage of pies, David. Yeah. But they said, 14 years of great progress destroyed in the last 3 months. Bob Bradley has landed himself in a pre-accident hot mess. And his Premier League dream has quickly become the stuff of nightmares. You can say he should never have taken this job, but there does come a time in a man's career when he realises if he doesn't take a risk, it's never going to happen, David. What can he do against Manchester United? At John Keely tweets us to say the only way he can do it is if he raises the fashion stakes and takes it up another notch, goes full tuxedo.
Huh. Well, he clearly went and bought a new overcoat this past weekend. It was an interesting little military-inspired number with the epaulettes.
Dig out your USA tracksuit top, Bob. Yes. Greatness will follow. Or live by the words of Swansea and Dylan Thomas. Bob, rage, rage against the dying of the light. Do not go gentle into that good night.
Great words to inspire a Togger fantasy football update. Props to Park the Bus FC, who appropriately started Burnley keeper Tom Heaton on their Togger team this week. Heaton combined with Hazard, Coutinho, Sanchez and Aguero to send Park the Bus to the top of the round 10 table. A patch is on the way to you.
Credit producer Jen, by the way. Yeah. Fantastic weekend.
Producer Jen killed the rest of the Men in Blazers team, Rog.
She only knows about the Pittsburgh Steelers squad.
I know, exactly. Basically, what we all do is we look at JW's team, copy it, and then make a couple of changes. For those of you not in our league, it's a weekly game. Just download the Tugger app on your phone. Select you're the worst offender. Select your perfect 11, and you'll be all set for next week's game in MLS. The first leg of the conference semi-finals saw every lower-seeded team win at home. In the Eastern Conference, Montreal defeated the New York Red Bulls 1-0 and Toronto beat NYCFC 2-0. Tragic end to that game. In the West, LA downed Colorado 1-0 and Seattle thumped Dallas 3-0.
No Drogba, no problem for Montreal. Mm. But I do feel for MLS, Davey. An all-New York conference final would have been a massive boost in terms of making some media noise around the playoffs.
Could still happen.
An all-Canadian affair. Mm. Yeah, the American media will jump all over that.
Yeah.
I want to apologise to everyone in the Dallas, Texas region where J-Dubs, Lexi and I descended last week.
Mm.
The curse of Rog has been
back.
All too real.
It's back.
Yeah, I mean, your beautiful team, MLS top performers in the regular season, blown away by a Seattle team who just scored 3 second-half goals in only 8 minutes. Jordan Morris, I've interviewed him several times. He seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, but I was with you the last time.
God, they were resplendent. And the scoreline, though, it shouldn't take away from the Dallas season, nor the achievements of their remarkable coach, Oscar Pereja.
Mm.
I say this, no man has developed more elite young homegrown players in recent years. And the pod we take with him, and released last week, live from Dallas, while we were still stuffed with barbecue from Hard Eight, is a must-listen for anyone who cares about the future of the game in the United States.
Okay, great, Rog. Another MLS quadruple header this Sunday for the second legs. It starts with Colorado versus LA at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Then at 4 p.m., it's the Red Bulls versus the Impact. Both of these games are on ESPN. Switch over to FS1. For NYCFC versus Toronto at 6:30 p.m. and FC Dallas versus Seattle at 9.
Say this about Montreal.
Yeah.
And I've said this before.
The Impact.
There's no better team in world football that's named after a font.
The winner of the coveted Guinness men... Yeah, Century Gothic do not play good football. I've made that joke before.
Dingbats.
Which means you must have
They're
made
coming.
The other joke before. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers poet, philosopher, Saka, scribe, Raven of the Week is... Josh! Next April, I'm getting married to my fiancé, Mazel Tov, who is an avid book lover. We decided on the Strand Bookstore in New York as our venue, specifically in the Rare Book Room. My question is this. Would a tweed three-piece suit be an appropriate ensemble? We are having a casual cocktail-style wedding, but is April too early to rock tweed? If so, do you have a suggestion for a different style I could wear? Oh, this is a good question.
Should wear what Bob Bradley wore for his first game.
Mm.
I think women love it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's turtleneck.
I don't think the question whether
formal
it's too
shoes.
Early. It's whether it's too late to wear tweed, Rog. Tweed tends to sort of get ushered in the fall. You wear it through the winter. April is a tricky month in New York. You know, March, what's it? It comes in like a lion, goes out like a lamb. April, depending on what the weather's like when you're here, April can be like 85 degrees.
Yeah, but I have a pair of tweed underpants and I still wear them in April.
And especially, I know, see my comments earlier about Roger's garter with nails in it. But it's a, it could be way too hot. And I worry about the ventilation in the Strand bookstores, particularly in the Rare book room. It might be a little bit warm to wear the three-piece tweed suit. But then again, it's too early for seersucker. April's a tough month, Rog.
I've got two conflicting rules on wedding attire.
Yeah.
Rule one,
mm-hmm.
Wear what you feel is really an expression of your true self.
Mm.
And your excitement about the union ritual you're about to experience with a person that you love.
Uh-huh.
Rule two,
mm-hmm.
Be careful. It's a dangerous game. Make sure you pass that choice through the rule of the test of time. For my wedding, I wore what I thought was a beautiful velvet waistcoat from an English tailor, Faverbrook, a German street, David.
Mm.
It's got red roses hand-embroidered into it. I thought it was the most stunning garment I'd ever owned. Now when I look at it, it appears I must have arrived in a clown car with David Luiz driving. So if you can find the right kind of calibration, the right balance between those two rules.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, tweed passes both of the above. No fabric passes the test of time better. So I'll say, Josh, mate, may your union be the tweed of marriages. And I wish you both health and happiness for a lifetime. Do it. Do it. What did you wear for your wedding?
For one of my weddings.
You wear Chelsea kit.
It's tough. I could go through them like I can't. Let me count down my top 10 of my wedding attire, Rog. No, I wore tails. I wore traditional English morning suit, tails, the whole thing.
God, I would have put money the fact you wore like a full-on replica Chelsea kit.
what's it that Mike Myers said on the show? There's no one more English than an Englishman who lives in America. Your weekend looks like this. Saturday, it's time, Rog. El Blazerico, Chelsea versus Everton at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. It's those weird times right now because the English clocks have fallen back. And
it's
we haven't
terrible
yet.
Time, mate.
Sunday, a slightly more storied rivalry as Arsenal host Spurs in the 179th North London Derby.
That's the undercard.
Yeah, that's followed by Liverpool versus Watford at 9:15 a.m. All of those games are on the NBC family of networks. It is a family. Genuinely a family.
And like any family.
Yeah. there are many other ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Francis Biggles, more
so was the Cosby
Emporium
family.
Page, and many places gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the costs of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book. Canada by Mike Myers.
Oh.
Our guest, my hero. A curious book, full colour volume, stuff full of exquisite visual cues. But it's really a gorgeous piece of writing about what makes Canada, Canada. It's a stealth memoir, really, of an immigrant family who left Liverpool in the 50s, found their home in a strange, wonderful land that the author grew to love. And in the telling, it's just a beautiful, perceptive story that made me laugh out loud. It's something I rarely do on planes when I read it. The parts I love were mostly about, and I said this to you and him, about Mike Myers' dad, Eric, a dyed-in-the-wool Liverpudlian who gave Mike his tragic love at Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, from the Royal Engineers, like my father.
He writes about his dad. He says, in Liverpool, what could be laughed at is yourself. The self-deprecation that's the mark of English and by extension Canadian comedy. Someone once asked my dad, is everything a joke? To which he answered, hopefully.
That's so good.
See,
Rog.
It's an amazing book.
I'm putting in a book too. The Big Book of Words You Should Know to Sound Smart, a guide for aspiring intellectuals, Rog. It's the ultimate word book for aspiring intellectuals, the most compendious collection of words for aspiring scholars. This book helps you hold your own in intellectual discourse, featuring 2,400 sophisticated, obscure, and obtuse terms. Each page provides you with the definitions you need to know to lock academic horns with the derisi. From antebellum and eleemosynary to impasto and putative, you will quickly master hundreds of erudite phrases that will improve your standing in society.
Oh, David, the chapter on don't mug me off is apparently
exactly.
A pièce de résistance.
It's brilliant. That is my definition of a great bathroom book, Rog. I don't have any new words yet. I've just started it. Okay, Rog, visit meninblazers.com to sign up for a newsletter, which we produce with our partner Guinness. Special issue going out next week in advance of the USA versus Mexico game.
It's quite great, actually.
You can follow us on Twitter, @MenInBlazers, @EmbassyDavies, @RogBennett, on Instagram, @MenInBlazers, @Embassy_Davies, Facebook, MenInBlazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap pot or so. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex my dumbo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
When you get married to Tweed.
A Brigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America.
Kung Fu Fighting Rog.
Love you, David.
Love you too, Rog.
Not in the face. Not in the face. Please, God, not. In the face.
I love you in the face too.